while you and I take turns in a warm bed, sipping soup and curling up with a loved one, we are oblivious to the struggle that many people who are forced to live on the streets in Cape Town face. We have spoken previously about the Woodstock Hospital being occupied by people to get the city to see that there is a way to house people closer to the city. But have you ever wondered, who are these people? What are their stories? I went to the hospital to find a few families transforming an abandoned site into a space of hope. Shane van der Mesh is what we would call the housemaster, who ensures everyone at the house is taken care of. Being one of the first members to have joined this project, I was extremely curious as to how he got there.
It's about 4.5 months now that I've been here. I was renting from a guy in Woodstock, very close to here. I had rented with a friend. My friend had erred on the lease, although it was my place under me. And I was evicted unfairly. I took police there, had no recourse. All I could keep was my keys. He kept my clothing and everything. So my only option would be to stay on the streets. I found people that started looking after me, started taking care of myself. And, you know, a month goes by, 2 months go by, you start losing hope. And the city came around numerous times to find out details, obviously confiscate certain things they don't allow, if it's a tent or anything like that, like a shelter. They've got strict rules about the things you're allowed to have with you on the streets. So one day a gentleman approached me in the morning from Pine Road, from my external committee. Jock came over and just said to me, would you like to go and stay in the structure? And I didn't believe him. So he said to me, I'll be back at about 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon to come fetch you. And I thought nothing of it. We were busy preparing food. And he walked up and he said, are you ready? We're going. So I left pots, pans, everything just like that. I left my whole life behind and I came. And ever since, things have just improved in my life. I was really, really ill at that stage. I was permanently on antibiotics. I had holes and bites all over my arms. I was really, really sick, highly infected, just not well spiritualized, morally. Financially, I was just making ends meet and taking care of the guys around me. I wasn't able to do anything more. And when I came in here, my life just turned around. Reclaim the City gave me firstly a mattress. They offered me a room, which was something highly unusual for me. I got to pick a room, started getting your self-respect back. They started educating you about your basic human rights, things that you have. And the more I got educated, I came here for an accommodation, purely, selfishly. And within the first week, I just fell in love with this cause because of the difference they make in people's lives. They offer you to get your dignity back.
After chatting to Shane for some time, I realized that he's the man that I've seen many times standing by the traffic lights in Pardon Island with a board that's lit up with some Christmas lights. I've seen him there so many times, but I've never asked him his story, which makes me wonder, why is he still standing at the traffic lights?
I leave here in the mornings about 4 o'clock, head out to Pardon Island in the main road. I'm at the traffic light there as you come out of the harbour. And I go there to ask for donations, purely because people don't come to us and help us. We've got to go out there and help ourselves. So I started making Christmas lights and attaching them to a board so that people would notice me in the early hours of the morning on their way to work. And I receive donations from them, clothing, sometimes shoes, sometimes money, foods, goods. And I bring that home in the mornings. And before I start doing the daily work around here for Reclaim the City, we have a look at what I've received and we disperse that according to ourselves, amongst ourselves as far as food's concerned.
During my time at the hospital, I met one of the latest families who have moved onto the site. Shanika Abdullah, her 6-month-old daughter and 11-year-old daughter and husband were evicted during the first week of July. This is her story.
I was evicted last week. There was a lawyer involved, but at the end of the day, it seems like the lawyer didn't do his job. I went to the legal aid in town, and then they said they can't help us because the case is too far already. So I went to Wynberg Court to ask the magistrate if they can extend because there's an eviction letter. Of which the magistrate said that the case is already, it's a done case, they can't do anything. The only person that can do anything is the owner of the property. We were in the car, staying in the car. Our stuff were put outside, the locks was changed. And me and my six-month-old baby, 11-year-old daughter and my husband found ourselves outside on the road, sleeping in the car. From then onwards, I went onto the internet, went onto Facebook and I saw the ad. I said to my husband, this is the only way out here now. We have to go to that meeting and see what they can do for us. So on Saturday, I came to the meeting that what these people are doing and went and I asked and I said to them, I'm actually on the street and I've got a little one and my body sore from sleeping in the car and is there any way out for me? And then they said to me, that's Janika, that we will get help for you. And I asked again, as soon as when? And they said to me, just as soon as yesterday. So that gave me hope. Then on Sunday, I had a call from Shane saying that Janika, you can come in, there's a room available. I was in tears and I said to my husband, we have to come immediately, we can't wait. We moved in on Sunday and since then I've been here and life has been much more easier.
Jennifer Williams shares her experience of how she got to the hospital site and how she feels now that she's here.
I was staying in a car outside in Queens Road. I was out windows without nothing. I was just sleeping like that and in the morning when I wake up, then I must go to work because I did work by the council that time to sweep the places and that things, yeah.
And how did you find out about
it? No, it's Uncle Ismail. He stayed there in Queens Road because it was his car. So in the night, he threw a plastic over it. But that night, it was when the guys was wanted to rape me in the car, three black guys. So then he said for me, Jennifer, stand up, wake up. I said, what's going on? He said to me, no. I said, because I was screaming and they was trying to choke me. But okay, the Ismail came by the window and he ran. He said, Jennifer, the next day when I came from work, he said to me, 7 o'clock, Jennifer, go to Sisikua. I said, why? He said, you are already in the community. You was the first one by the meetings here. They already said, if you haven't got a place, you can come stay here. The night when I came here, they said to me, I can stay 2 nights first. Okay, I said for them, that is nothing, so long I'm under a roof. But then after that 2 nights, they said for me, now you must go. Then I said for them, where must I go to now? Must I go sleep in the park or where must I go to sleep? And then after that, they said for me, okay, Jenny, if it's like that, then you're going to stay here.
Now that we've established that there are a number of families at this facility, what do they actually have access to? Do they have clean running water?
At the moment in this section, what we've prepared so far, we've got 22 rooms available. There's a lot of work to be done. There's broken windows. There's a lot of cleaning to be done. So when we arrived in the building, there was no water. We worked on a bucket system. We had 6 buckets. You fetch water on the far side in the surgery room and then have to carry everything through. It was very difficult. There's no flushing on the toilets and like it. But we've taken parts off and mixed and matched. And at 3 days of hard work, we took all the fire hoses and joined them. And we laid water from the far side of the building to this side. So we've now got water in the kitchen and we've got water in the toilet, in the one toilet. So at least that's running water for us.
As I browse the facility, just getting used to the transformation of an abandoned building into a safe haven for many of the people there, I found posters on the wall, but I was quite curious of the house rules that were ironed out there. Shane explains these for us.
We've got basic rules like respecting each other, staying out of each other's goods. You don't help yourself to other people's foods. One of our major rules is no alcohol on the premises and not to come back drunk. It just comes down to self-respect. People that are on the street, you're already done, you're already having a hard time. There's no reason to go and drink and celebrate. We have to fix our lives. We have to get our lives together. And then we've also got curfew rules for people. We understand if you're working, if you earning your bread outside late in the evenings. We've got a taxi driver that stays here with Uber. We haven't got a problem with him coming back 11, 12 at night because it's arranged. But if you're going to go out and go and have a party or a few drinks, we don't allow that. Our curfew is 9 o'clock in the evening and you're allowed to leave as early as you'd like to.
Now that we understand that no one can just move in and join those that are occupying the hospital, it would be interesting to find out if the goal they are set out can be achieved. In the next part of the story, I chat to Nelson Katani, who advocated a similar project in Kalteng and has seen positive results. Stay tuned tomorrow as we continue our journey on the occupation of the Woodstock Day Hospital. For VOC News, I'm Najma Bibi Noor Mohammed.